Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Well, hello and welcome to this Hoop Collective Low Post crossover. Low Post X Hoop Collective. Well, 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 Zachary Lowe, we got ourselves an NBA Finals.
Yeah, we do. And the Heat, man. What can you say about the Heat? This whole thing has been incredible, from a Max Strus avalanche away from losing to the Bulls, who are probably sitting here brainwashing themselves into thinking they're one break away from being up or tied 1-1 in the NBA Finals, to this. And I just think you have to conclude now, this is real. The team that went 44-38 in the regular season and was blah was some version of reality, but it understated how good the team was. Team that was in the finals not long ago, one shot away from the finals last season, had like an 82-game shooting slump, had some injuries, had some uncertainties, and has come together and caught lightning in a bottle, and this is closer to their true level than that was, because all the talk coming into this game was, boy, Denver's 13-3, they haven't lost at home, like this could be a historically great playoff run. And the Heat came out, they shot the hell out of it, they took care of the ball, they tried their best to finagle things on defense, and they won this game. Just you can't say enough about the resiliency of this team.
This is the Heat. This is who they are. This is what they've been doing now for 2 months. It's what, in some ways, they've been doing for 30 years, but this particular team has been doing for 2 months now. They are a team that has a lot of different tools in its tool belt. They can play a lot of different ways. They have a lot of different guys they can go to. They have excellent, excellent coaching. They have excellent confidence. And really, it was not high-level strategy changes. It was actually very simple changes. They went to Kevin Love in the starting lineup because he makes more sense with the way the Nuggets were playing. You will wonder what would happen if they had gone to Love starting game one. We'll never know. And they elected to play defense the way they did in the fourth quarter of game one, which is to back off of Jokic and offer him shots. And I also think that it helped them that they got ahead early in the game, because Jokic kind of took a score, like sort of flipped the scorer's mentality. He kind of played into it a little bit because he felt he had to. But the truth is that over the last five quarters, Jokic has taken 35 shots. 35 shots over the last five quarters, and the Heat have won. And when it won all five. And not each individually, but they've been their better team in those five quarters. And I'll say this: if you look at this particular game, the Nuggets slaughtered the Heat in the start of the second quarter, when Jokic went to the bench, and basically it was their second units versus each
other.
This
is the Jokic-Butler resting together stretches, which are going to be critical in every game.
And the Nuggets in the second quarter slaughtered the Heat in that time. But for the rest of the game, the Heat were demonstrably the better team. Jokic scores 41 points and is minus 11.
So the Heat... The Heat won this game with offense, which we're going to get to, because I think the narrative is going to be they turned Jokic into a scorer and that helped them win the game. And I think they did some interesting things with how they defended Jokic, but I'm looking at cleaning the glass. The offensive ratings for these two teams in this game, 129 for Miami, 126 for Denver. Both of those would blow away the best offense in the NBA. And I think the Heat won this game mostly with offense. They're a shots-on-goal team. Low turnovers, 48% on threes. Gabe Vincent, Duncan Robinson.
Max Strus,
4 of 10. Duncan Robinson in that fourth quarter. And the stretches to really zero in on. Second quarter, you mentioned the Nuggets dominating those minutes. They go from down 11 to up 50-35. And at that moment, at 50-35, it felt like the avalanche had hit the Heat, and this wonderful run was going to just sort of blah to the end, that they were going to run out of gas. And they closed that game behind their starters. You know, Jimmy Butler made a couple of plays. Gabe Vincent had an and one. They got it to six at the half, and I thought that was huge. And then the fourth quarter, those minutes we talked about before, they go down. I think they enter the fourth down eight. Duncan Robinson single-handedly has an 8-0 run that includes him missing a free throw. They get the rebound. He hits a three instead. Those two stretches of the game were places where less tough teams, less resilient teams would have lost, would have not at least come back and made it a game. The game would have maybe have gotten away from them, and the Heat just fought and fought and fought. And they just made shots, and they made shots, and the zone was okay. I don't think the zone was great, but it was okay.
And yeah, they made threes tonight. They couldn't buy a three in game one. Would they make 17 or something like that tonight?
17 of 35.
So you shoot like that, especially on the road, you got a great chance to win. But I know what you're saying about the offensive rating. I get it. The Nuggets are not as potent of a team when Jokic is a shooter. They can still win the championship probably that way. In fact, as I was watching this game with 8 minutes left and the Heat were up by five, I thought Jokic will probably figure out a way to bring them back. And I'm sure in the Nuggets locker room right now, because one of the things about the Nuggets after game one, they did not feel they played well, especially in the second half.
Emphatically, they did not. And that wasn't just public posturing. That's privately right. That's what they were saying.
Seriously, in the locker room, they were saying, like, maybe they weren't using these words exactly, just to be clear. They were like, man, Miami's probably kicking themselves that they didn't beat us when we played this rusty game coming off 9 days off. Like, they played good in the first half, but the second half, they thought they played very poorly. And the Heat got the Nuggets to play the same style of basketball that they did in the fourth quarter in this game. And I know what you're saying about the offensive rating, but when Jokic has four assists, the Nuggets obviously can still win. They're obviously still great on offense. They've got a lot of weapons, but that is not them at their best.
We should probably talk about the fact that Jamal Murray had a three-pointer at the buzzer to tie the game.
Yes.
We should probably get to the end game.
Okay, fair point.
Let's get to the end game. Jokic cuts it to three. They get a stop, right? I can't remember
stop. Let me take one step back.
Okay.
When they cut it to three for the first time on the Jamal Murray, hit his second three.
Yeah, they hit
made
two straight threes.
Brilliant. Jokic gets the rebound and throws the cross-court diagonal pass, the slow-motion replay on TV with his eyes wide open.
Yeah, KCP had missed a good three. Jokic offensive rebound against
the ball. The ball hits Jamal Murray in the shooting pocket. Talk about a brilliant pass. So anyway, but my point is, so that cuts it to three. The Heat come down to the other end, and it's a vitally important possession. It's inside a minute.
Inside a minute, yep.
They are very calm in that moment, Zach. They very calmly work through their options. They put Jokic in a pick and roll because that's something that they did more of tonight as well. They wanted Jokic to move around on defense a little bit. They know that their bread and butter in the first two games in the series has been to get the ball to Bam Adebayo in space. So they ran their stuff. They couldn't get what they wanted. They were patient. They get the ball to Bam Adebayo in space. He does not freak out with 3 seconds on the shot clock when he gets the ball in space. He pump fakes, gets the foul. In this environment where you know, like, the Nuggets are flying, I think it was a 12-2 run somewhere at that point, for them to execute that play and then for Bam to be calm and then make the two free throws, extraordinarily important.
Because, interestingly, the Heat have been on the other end of a lot of games like that where they're the team coming back against a team that's kind of wobbling in the ends. They know what that game is like.
They've got a lot of reps this way.
And Bam knocks down both free throws. Jokic gets a floater. Butler misses a three, a step-back three at the end of the clock. No timeout.
Jokic, like, just plays bully ball to get back
Jokic,
to three.
Jokic got, like, Jokic was like, I don't even want to look at Cody Zeller's face anymore. I don't like his face. I don't like his hair. I don't like anything about him.
I don't care if he wears the mask or not.
Get him the hell out of this game. Jokic was like, I'm sick and tired of all this crap. I'm just going at everybody. So he makes a floater. Butler misses a three. And you wanted to talk about Mike Malone's decision to not call timeout. I think they get the rebound with 14 seconds left. 11.1. Bruce Brown gets a defensive rebound.
There's people talking about whether he should take a timeout there.
Which is just an endless point of discussion, right?
Well, we also could have whether Spoelstra should foul there.
Well, to me, I'm glad you brought that up because that is the much more interesting coaching decision to me. I don't care about the no timeout. I thought they got as good of a look as you
could get. Especially because Jamal is red hot in that moment.
And I thought the bigger story was, we haven't heard Spo's press conference, so we come right out here and do this. Did they want to foul?
I think I saw about 6 feet from where we're sitting here. I think I saw Spo indicate no foul.
No foul.
Okay. I mean, I could be wrong, but if they didn't foul.
And Jimmy reached at one point in a way that made you think, is he trying to foul? No, he's just trying to get the ballsy ass turnover.
It actually kind of messed the play up a little bit, so it was effective.
I thought it was a good to look. I had no problems with the Nuggets process. Did you? What are the people saying?
I just heard a little bit of question about that play. As I was watching the ball in the air, I was like, well, we could be going to overtime. I was watching it come through the air. It looked good to me. Could have gone in and didn't, you know, and that's the thing. Like,
I just think down three, if you get what you would describe as the kind of look you would say in the flow of the regular flow of the game, you'd be like, that's a reasonable look. I think that's like a win for the offense.
The only thing I would say is, like, I don't know enough about what the data is on how much the Nuggets have done that this year. I just don't know. Obviously, they have a comfort level with because ultimately, look, you're going to put Jokic and Murray in the two-man game. That's probably what you're going to call out of the timeout, right? Aren't you going to call that out of the timeout?
Probably. The ball has to touch Jokic's hands, obviously.
And if it ends up with Jamal Murray getting a decent look, you're gonna live with it.
I don't know. They have so many weapons. You could telegraph that, and then the real play is like a flare screen for Michael Porter Jr. to shoot a three.
I don't want
Michael Porter Jr., by the way, was bad tonight. And I don't even know what his box score stats were offensively. He was a complete mess on defense. He was at the center of a lot of their absolute worst breakdowns. And twice at different points in the game, he had breakdowns, immediately after which Michael Malone brought Bruce Brown into the game. And I think if there's something...
And there was one he called a timeout where Jeff Van Gundy said, Michael Porter Jr. is going to get screamed at in the huddle.
Well, I mean, he walked away from Kevin Love on a three. He was late rotating to Bam on a dunk with like 4:50 to go in the fourth quarter on a pick and roll. It was his rotation. He didn't make it. He got lost switching on to Gabe Vincent and just sort of let him and Kevin Love get it. He was awful on defense the whole game. A very big regression for a guy who has improved a lot. And if there's a storyline to watch going into game three, and by the way, credit the Heat, because you can sit here and say, well, the first three Struce threes of the game were all on Denver breakdowns. Two of them, they botched switches and nobody went with Magic Struce. The third one, I think it was Murray, was at the nail while Jimmy was isolating against Aaron Gordon.
But let me just say.
Hold on. The Nuggets need to stop overhelping when Jimmy's isolating on Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's got it. It's fine. Struce hits a three. But Miami, I keep saying this. The best thing you can say about the Heat is they just keep playing. And when they just keep playing, they maximize the chances that somewhere along the line, you're going to mess up.
Well, the way that the Nuggets are playing Jimmy Butler is working. Jimmy is not getting the looks that he's normally likes to get.
He's missed some good ones, too.
Well, he also botched a couple of, like, easy – like he totally blew one layup in this game.
He had another one. Did you think he had a pass from the rim to Struce in the corner where I thought he had a layup?
Look, Jimmy came in the fourth quarter. He sat the first 4 minutes of the fourth. The Heat actually took the lead, and I was wondering, what are we going to get from Jimmy here? And he did make three or four plays.
And a big corner three with like
6:50 to go, maybe. He was very good coming
down the
fourth,
and then he had a pump-and-go drive past Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, he had that little floater, which I think he spent the last 2 days working on, because I think he's realized that he's going to have to shoot the ball over the big guys, and so he's working on his floater. They are doing a good job on Jimmy Butler. Let me say something else. And I am a staunch defender of the officiating. I am a guy who does not believe the officiating makes a difference in games.
Oh, the goaltend.
A huge amount of times. I felt that the Heat got three or four calls that were either flat out incorrect that went their favor, or that were key 50-50 calls that went their favor. A couple of out-of-bounds plays and the goaltend.
A bunch of three-shot fouls in this game. A lot of flailing. There's a lot of flailing.
So that's,
flailing of the legs. A lot of flailing.
That Kyle Lowry foul when, you know, in the fourth quarter when Caldwell Pope came over, that could have been a no call.
The clear path foul on Jokic was the right call.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny about that? He saw Love about to throw it when they put it in slow motion, and he's yelling, no, no, no. So that was a no-brainer call. No, I'm talking about there was just three or four calls that could have gone – they were either incorrect or could have gone either way, and they went the Heat's way. And if you're going to win a game like this on the road, sometimes you need to get a call. And, you know, me saying this, the Heat could probably produce, you know, their own report if they wanted to that would say that was the other way. But I'm just saying.
I think we definitely need more teams to do their own officiating
reports.
Then leak them to the press strategically before critical games. I think we need more of that. Dossiers. They should be dossiers.
Yeah, well, there have been dossiers, and I reject
two,
them on
3, 4, 5 Sixers.
And before that, where'd the code to come from?
Yeah,
was there a dossier in Houston as well?
Houston, hello.
Anyway, I am loath to talk about officiating. I think the Nuggets
got punchy at the end of these games.
It's only 9:00.
I know it's so early.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
So let me ask you this. What do you think the Heat should do about Tyler Hero?
Oh, Tyler Hero. I mean, really, it depends on his physical readiness, right? And if he's ready...
He's been doing contact for almost a week now, and we're in the finals. We're not in January.
I've been talking with a lot of people around this series about this. There are divided opinions within both teams.
I agree.
To me, I if he's going to come back, if he's physically ready, because this is the finals, man. It is hard to come back.
I agree. And the Heat have been great for 7 weeks now without him.
And I've said that many times. And I said going into this series, I think this Denver team is so good. And their pick and roll defense, there are ways to peck at it with pull up jump shooters. And that's one thing Tyler Hero can do. And obviously the Nuggets are going to go at him defensively, just like they go at Robinson and Strus. And Robinson, and by the way, his play has turned this into an even more complicated conversation. I think if I'm around him, Eric Spoelstra, and I see it and I feel it and I feel confident in it, I think I try him in a very limited role. Like, let me see if you can make a few shots in a 4 or 5 minute stretch. Maybe Jokic is off the floor, so I don't have to worry about Jokic running things in your direction on the other end. I think it's worth a try, but I'm ready to pull the plug early and have a tough conversation.
So my thing is, you're left with two things. Like, if you lose the series and you don't play him, you'll always say to yourself, I wonder what would have happened if we played him. Or if you do play him, you do risk messing up what you got going. But I think not playing the card is kind of the bigger thing that you would have a harder time living with.
Well, would you have a harder time living with it because he will always resent it, or because if you lose the series, there'll always be a what if hanging
look,
over it?
You can't worry about what players want. You got to do what's right for the team. But I think, you know, they paid this guy $30 million a year.
He was sixth man of the year last year, and I voted for him. Tyler Hero, I voted for you sixth man of the year. You deserved it.
Why are you saying that? Is he angry at you for some reason?
I don't know. But this is one of the great things about having a coach with – so much credibility, experience, and airtight job security. He doesn't have to worry about what are people going to say about me? Am I going to be second guest? Or like, none of that matters to him. He's just going to watch Tyler Hero, listen to Tyler Hero, watch his team, watch how these games unfold, and make the decision that he and his staff think is the best one, not worried about the repercussions.
Who do you think has the edge in this series right now?
I would still say Denver.
Yeah.
Because I think they're just better. And
this is what I was saying about the Celtics the whole last round.
Maybe the answer is just always the Heat. The Heat could have gone down 3-0 and they would have still had the edge.
Look, let's be honest. On balance, Milwaukee was better than them.
Giannis did get injured.
Okay. But they beat him before. They were beating him before he got injured. Right?
Yes, they were, and they beat him when he came back. Not 100%, obviously, but.
Jalen Brunson and Julius Randle were nicked up.
No pun intended.
But that's a strong team that they beat. They were not favored in that series. And the Celtics should still be bashing their head against the wall that they lost that series, in my opinion. So what is the other team being better? I mean, that's not going to deter the Heat.
No. And
I mean, being better, like, on the spreadsheet, not necessarily in actual play.
So I'm going to read you a stat, because I think this has become the most interesting subplot of the series. Here are the points per possession on Nikola Jokic post-ups tonight for Denver. If he shot out of the post or passed to someone who shot off the pass, 1.857 points per possession.
That's very good.
I mean, that's not even very good. That's just like, are you playing a video game? Points per possession overall, if you zoom out any possession on which Jokic touches the ball in the post, 2.22, which is like, I don't even think I've seen a 2.
Okay. Agree.
No. Let me give you the most important number.
Okay.
Total post touches for the game, 9. That's probably middling. I'm looking at his playoff game log: 15, 14, 12, 12, 11, 9, 9, 9, a bunch of 9s. To me, the interesting stat is the 9. It's the fact that they limited him to. It felt like more than that, and you can define post touch one way or another. But the fronting, the swarming, Bam's speed, denying the entry passes, the zone, it did limit the amount of times he touched the ball in a traditional back-to-the-basket position. And I actually think, despite what you're saying about turning him into a scorer, not a passer, I think that the Nuggets need to try to pry open more than 9 post touches, because he is so dominant in the post. And credit the Heat for making it hard to get there.
He's
now
dominant everywhere.
Yeah, he was dominant everywhere. He had 40-whatever points. Now, some of those fronts, the Nuggets beat them by driving around, just like in game 1, because Bam can't get from the front to the paint. And if you just drive around it like it's one big double screen, you get a layup, or KCP got a lob to Aaron Gordon. Bruce Brown got a 3 out of it. But I think Miami is okay living with that over just giving the ball to Jokic in the post. And I think through screens, cross screens, I think one of the items on Michael Malone's desk should be, how do we get him better post touches, because the Heat have done well to just kind of complicate it a little bit. I know I said, what did I say, the offensive rating was 125, like that's good enough to win almost every time for Denver, so it wasn't really a problem. But I think they did take them just out of, they just weren't that comfortable, it didn't seem like.
I'm just going to say that the Nuggets are an extraordinarily potent team and did many things well enough to be up 2-0 in this series. But they are kick-ass in this building, and they have not always been kick-ass on the road.
A monster win for the Heat to win this game in this building.
They have not been as good on the road in the playoffs.
The other interesting battle to watch is, I thought the Heat were better tonight at kind of sussing out what Denver is doing defensively against their pick-and-rolls, particularly Butler's pick-and-rolls, which is mostly dropping Jokic back. And you saw Jokic come up higher against Lowry. They still got a couple big threes out of it, at least one. And it's certainly against Strus Robinson. But against Butler, Vincent, they're dropping him back, but they're bringing a third guy over into the paint to help on Bam, to give Jokic more support. And the Heat were kind of better at sniffing that out, Jimmy driving like right under the rim and then kicking it out to who's ever open because of that third guy helping, and playing from there off the catch, off the drive. And that's another one where Michael Porter Jr. missed a rotation. Gabe Vincent, how many points did Gabe Vincent have tonight?
24, three.
And didn't play the closing couple minutes of the game. I thought their offense was very deliberate and targeted in that way. Not, I don't think their defense was bad. It was good offense.
They have not had trouble generating open shots.
Yeah, no, they haven't. They're getting good threes.
And I would just say that Bam is getting the ball in space to go to work. Now, this is, I wrote a piece that published yesterday about how Bam has had numerous games in his career against the Nuggets that are very good games. Like, you know, evaluating the output.
Yeah.
And then he's been overwhelmed by the other guy because, like, he'll have these brilliant games.
And on paper, this will be another game like
that. I agree. But I will say that the Heat find comfort in those plays where Bam gets the ball on the screen roll and has space because Jokic, they have to account for what Jokic does.
Well, and I'm calling it the Jokic yo-yo, and I thought the Heat were good about setting up things in that way where I talked about him dropping back on the pick and roll. So you get him into the paint because you know he's going to drop back. And then Bam, no pun intended, you kick it to Bam up top, who's all of a sudden in an action with a shooter, and Jokic has to go from the paint north, right, direct north-south up to the three-point arc, rush out at that shooter. Bam can then roll into open space, and Jokic has to go back to the paint. Like, riding that yo-yo is how you beat Denver.
I just think that if you looked at what the Heat did tonight, I don't have the number of how many pick and rolls they put Jokic in game two versus game one, but I feel like it was more because they like when Bam can get the ball with room to operate. I just think they like it. And I don't have a problem with the Nuggets playing that way because they very easily could be up 2-0 playing that way. But Bam was more efficient tonight than he
was.
What
did you think of they parceled out for the second straight game, parceled out the zone very limited in the first half, mostly when Jokic was on the bench. And for the second straight game in the fourth quarter, we're like, let's throw caution to the wind and play it while Jokic is in the game. And I thought Miami did an okay job taking them out of their stuff. But what did you think of the zone?
I think in the fourth quarter was mostly about offense, not defense.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think I'm trying to think about when they mostly got the stops early in the quarter. Late in the quarter, it seemed like both teams are scoring.
I do think they're missing entry passes to Jokic in the zone. Like, they've got to be snappy bounce passes right into Jokic against the zone, but we'll see. Any other parting thoughts on this game?
1-1, man. 1-1, see you in Miami.
1-1, see you in Miami.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Should we talk about Frank Vogel for 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah.
The Suns, who have Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, for now, and maybe for longer than expected, DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker on their team did not hire Kevin Young as their head coach and instead hired Frank Vogel, late of the Lakers, then the Magic, then the Pacers. Kind of an interesting hire. Certainly, I don't think the sexiest hire the Suns could have made, but what are your thoughts, early thoughts?
I think it's a lot like when he got hired to coach the Lakers. It wasn't 100% clear if he was the first choice on this job. They say he is, but what else are they going to say?
Yeah, can we stop the thing where every coach pulls out of the search minutes before the hiring is announced? Yeah. I also it wasn't reported. I pulled out of the search.
I mean, like,
did you?
I love.
Or did you stay until the end?
I love Nick Nurse. He's my guy. Him pulling out of the Milwaukee.
Do you have an NN hat?
I do not have an NN hat. him pulling out of the search in Milwaukee was so it didn't look bad when his assistant got the job over him. Right?
Well, I pulled out of that one a couple weeks before.
Anyway.
I didn't.
When Frank Vogel got hired in L.A., they wanted Monty Williams.
And Ty Lue.
And Ty Lue. They hired Frank Vogel, and the day he got hired, Magic flamed Rob Pelinka on national television. And they had
that was quite a day.
And Frank had to sit there while Rob Pelinka dealt with the fallout from that. And Frank handled it brilliantly. I'll never forget it, and I commended him for it. And like a year later, he was getting the ring, okay, or winning the ring. In this situation, they had 5 or 6 candidates. They can say Frank Vogel was number one. I don't know. But they went through a big process, and they kind of came around to saying, you know what? This guy is a good choice. That's what the Lakers did too. Same situation. They had LeBron and AD. How are they going to make everybody happy? Let's pick out a guy who's had some success. That's what they did here, and I think there's no reason to believe. I'm not saying they're going to win the title, but I have no reason to believe that it won't lead to success just like it did in L.A.
Yeah, I think Frank is a good coach. Indiana was a rousing success. The Lakers, you won a title. And look, all you have to do is talk to the players about whether they thought that season Frank Vogel deserved credit for their defense, for their defensive mindset, for the size and force with which they played. And they would all happily tell you, yeah, he was one of the main people setting the tone from the very beginning that this was the kind of team we were going to be, and it paid off, and then they make the rush trade, and the whole thing unravels, and he's the fall guy, and he gets fired. Orlando was a mess. I don't really think it was his fault. The roster was just a complete mess of, like, 9,000 big guys. I think Frank's a good coach. You mentioned the word happy. They really need a happy year next year in Phoenix because they traded everything for Durant. Their entire supporting cast, I'm being a little facetious, is free agents this summer. They can't really pay functionally any of them. I mean, maybe one of them with whatever mid-level they
well,
might have.
Well, wait a minute.
They can pay a couple. They can pay a couple. But there are going to be suitors for those guys.
Yes. I think the Suns have a little bit more than meets the eye, depending on how they handle the Chris Paul situation.
Right. They've got – well, what do you mean by that? Like, whether they trade Chris Paul and what they get for him?
There are other things to do besides trading Chris Paul.
Stretch Chris Paul.
There are other things that
Chris
can be done.
I may be dumb. I think Chris Paul's still good.
I think Chris Paul will be a Sun next year. But what if he's a Sun and they don't have to pay him $30 million?
I see. You think Ayton will be a Sun next year?
I think there's a better chance than people think.
I think the chances went up by a non-trivial amount with the hiring of Frank Vogel, who has a good track record with centers.
I think
and
part of the reason why Frank Vogel got the job was because when he came in, he had an idea of what to do with DeAndre Ayton. It's not to mean that it's going to work. They obviously, as an organization, have a complicated relationship there. They did not want to pay him the max. But for the last year, he was in an adversarial relationship with his coach.
And I've heard Matt Ishbia has a fondness for DeAndre Ayton. I'm not sure how true that is, but I heard he likes his game.
I know this. They will not start the season this year with the coach and the player not liking each other. Maybe they will get there by January 15th, but they are not there now. So I think there are avenues that the Suns can explore that, especially if they have an owner who doesn't mind paying money. Remember, not all of the new rules come into effect this year.
No, 1 year waiting period on some. I think it's a good hire, but I just think it's a very big year for Phoenix next year. Is Durant going to be happy? Is that going to be the place that he ends up being settled and satisfied? And
has Durant ever been happy?
Maybe when he was younger. Parts of the Warrior year one Golden State. I didn't sense.
I think Durant likes playing with Booker.
I think so. I mean, how could you not? But given the outcome of the season.
Can I ask you this? Let's say you were Coach X.
Yeah.
And you were like, okay, you have the following players are without a coach: Joel Embiid, James Harden, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. Coach X, which one would you like to coach the most? I have an answer.
Well, have I pulled myself out of the search yet?
Not yet. Okay. You can pull yourself out of the search.
Okay. So Suns guys. But that's an easy question because
Devin Booker, this guy I want to coach.
Oh, you're telling me to pick one guy.
Yeah. I want to coach Devin Booker.
Well, it's definitely not James Harden.
No offense to Joel, I want to coach Devin Booker.
I just feel like that situation those guys are at least are under contract, and like I don't what team is James going to be on next year? What does that mean?
Well,
for Joel?
I think there's a little bit of more uncertainty with Phoenix. Like you don't know, the ownership is brand new. The front office is unclear what's going to happen there. You know, Philadelphia, you know who Josh Harris is. Daryl Morey is firmly established as the general manager.
Devin
Booker's
he's a killer.
I like the way Devin Booker handles his business.
So as we leave Ball Arena, anything else to say on the Suns?
I'd look up what Ball was, by the way.
I don't know what it is.
I also don't know what Kasaya is in Miami.
Don't know what that is. I know it's the Heat's arena.
I know that you and I will be back here for game 5.
Yes, we will be back here for game 5. I thought the Nuggets did tonight well. Rally towels instead of shirts. I like that. That's old school. And there was something else they did with the crowd that I'm forgetting. That
towels are cheaper than shirts.
Well, that's fine. Maybe that's why they're doing it. But I like a good rally towel. It's old school. Okay. I like that. Any lingering thoughts on the game? We got a series. We got a finals. It's exciting.
It is.
And now we get 2 off days again to luxuriate in a 1-1 series.
It's going to be a good start to the week because we're not going to know what's going to happen. I agree with you. I think Denver definitely still has the edge. They are definitely still the favorites. But they have not been as good on the road as they've been at home in this postseason.
What are they, 4-3 on the road?
I mean, they did.
They were under. I believe they were under 500 on the road in the regular season, weren't they?
It was close to 500. They did look good. They did handle their business in the LA series, but you know they lost 3-4 in the Phoenix series. So, I don't make predictions, but it would not surprise me. It would not surprise me if we come back here in 6 days and it's 2-2.
I'll sign up for that. I mean, that's a game. That's a capital G game.
Yeah.
We get that.
But I still think Denver is in good position. I just think that Miami stealing this one tonight opened up possibilities, opened up outs.
All right.
Thank you, Zach.
It's time to go do more work.
Very good. Thank you for listening. Hey, thanks to Adi, our producer, who's been running around.
He's fighting off interlopers left and right.
I know. There's all kinds of people trying to – some people who work at our company –
Matt are angry that we're here.
Shaq and Barkley, who are in Grant Hill, who are 10 feet away, they're not giving us any trouble.
No.
But other people are not happy that we're here.
We're back in Ball Arena in a few days.
Okay, thank you for listening.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.